Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. In this corner, a man who knows what it is to buy his comics off a spinning rack, weighing in at a comfortable weight for his age, it's Uncle George. And in this corner, relative young pup, newbie level graphic novel binge reader, weighing in at none of your f***ing business, it's Epic Boss McFall.
Welcome to Panel by Panel, where we talk about the experience of reading comics. If you want the newest, latest, and greatest, that's going to be some other awesome show. But here you're going to get the experience of the storylines, the biggest picture we can paint of specific story arcs or the fandom of certain artists or authors. I'm Charles. I've been reading since about 1995. With me is the in-house resident expert, Uncle George.
Howdy.
Who you said you've been reading since early 1970s.
Yes. I think it's about 1973 that I was actually seriously reading comics. Before that, I had dabbled in all kinds of comics from various companies, but
dabbled in the dark arts.
Yes.
So, you know,
but even things like Walt Disney and Donald Duck. Those
that the Archies. The Archies, man. So this is all about the experience, not just what's new and going on, but what we remember about reading it. Some of it's new, as in this episode. This is War of Kings Part 2, so it's new to both of us. So you get to experience with us as we read through it. Some of it is previous. We've done a Walt Simonson episode where Uncle George originally read it as it came out. He reread it. I read it new. We get to share the different experiences there. And that's what this is all about, panel by panel. We just break it down and we talk to you about it. So getting right into the heart of the matter, we're talking about War of Kings, and we've already set up how it got started, where it was going. And the biggest thing I forgot to mention, actually, in the last episode was the reason the Guardians of the Galaxy play so big into this. They were brand spanking new when this story came out. Adam Warlock was leading them on a hunt to find out why there were some tears in the space-time. Things were going on. They were trying to stop the tears and be on the front lines of galactic defense. And this story plays in majorly with a character named Starhawk, who keeps coming from about 3,000 years in the future where the darkness is enclosing. And it's a he or a she, depending on the flux and time, and they talk about that a little bit too. But the biggest thing is she comes back from the future because right now in the quote-unquote time period of the actual comic, right now is when the mistake happens. Something goes on, changes the course of the future history, and ultimately the Badoon are the only survivors, and between that and all of space-time collapsing in on itself, it's just a horrible existence. So she's back trying to fix it, and that really puts down this dark underscoring throughout the whole story if you've caught all the side bits. Now, in the main storyline, as if you're new to this episode, Uncle George read the main backbone storyline, the six-issue run of War of Kings, and I read all of the tie-ins and everything that went with it. In that main story run, George, did Nova really play in much at all?
I don't recall him making an appearance at all in this miniseries.
So while he was tied in, while the book Nova was tied in, it really was as a side note to reestablish Nova Prime, to reboot the big computer brain that helps them do all their stuff. It didn't control them, but it runs everything for them, gives them their power.
The crazy big computer, the Supreme Intelligence?
Supreme Intelligence. There you go.
Okay.
So they used this to reboot that and kind of move forward. It played into a lot of the side politics of it, but it did not play into the heart of the backbone. So why don't we pick up, the last thing we said about the backbone was Vulcan was storming across the Kree Empire and, you know, all hell's breaking loose and the Inhumans are partnered with the Kree. Actually, the Inhumans took over the Kree planet. Ronan knelt to them and is marrying Crystal to solidify that power. And now it's going to be this one big family, as it were. So what's going on from that point in what you read?
Well, it focused on the attempts by the Inhumans to evolve the Kree to, in the way that the Inhumans have evolved, to have unique powers amongst each of their members. But the Kree have reached an evolutionary dead end, so that's not working. So here come the Shi'ar attacking them, and the Inhumans eventually come up with this plan, or at least it's Black Bolt who comes up with this plan, to release the Terrigen Mist all across the galaxy. So kind of the line from The Incredibles: when everybody's super, nobody will be super. So yeah. Now Ronan objects to this on the principle that it's going to affect everybody but the Kree. So now they will be the lowest of the low in the entire galaxy, and he finds that unacceptable.
Right, as one should. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, their race is going to be placed on the bottom. Crystal's in between. She's torn. But at the same time, she's trying to help placate all this violence and help Black Bolt see it's not just Vulcan what's going on there. There's something bigger going on. And although nobody could put their finger on it, she sensed it the most.
Right. Yeah, the storyline is told both from her point of view and then on the other side, on the Shi'ar side, from Gladiator's point of view. So it switches back and forth between these two. And Crystal comes from the approach that what the Inhumans are doing is wrong. We need to come up with a better way. Whereas on Gladiator's side, he's working under his duty. He's got his orders. You know, it's kind of like the Nazi excuse. He's just following orders because his office comes with total obedience to whoever the emperor is, and what Gladiator's personal feelings are, what his personal ethics are, play no part in what he has to do.
Now, this is one of the places that the digital exclusive plays in. And if you're reading a Marvel Unlimited, as I did, they're mixed into the path. And I just read it from oldest to newest. So presumably the first thing where any of this tied in that was officially part of the War of Kings crossover to the final issue, which was a good 4 issues after the Backbone ended. There's digital exclusives popped in. And each one of these is simply just focusing on one character and why they are the way they are. And the only one that I thought truly mattered was Gladiators, because it shows what it took for him to become the Regent's Protector, whatever his actual title is, where he's the protector of the Empire, or the Emperor or Empress, or whoever holds the title. And I mean, he killed his best friend to essentially get that. And so that all plays in, and it's kind of like a flashback all of its own. And while they will put in flashbacks in the main story, it's a whole issue or 2 issues of straight flashback about that one character. But yeah, he serves. What was the phrase that kept going through it? I serve at the pleasure of the Emperor.
More or less, yes.
Yeah, something along those lines. And they pulled no punches, writing Vulcan as this complete, and not even crazy. Honestly, he was just like, nope, I'm going to watch the universe burn.
Essentially a cosmic a-hole.
Yeah. You know what? Because this came out in some of the story. I don't remember if it's the Backbone or not, but as part of, we talked about in the first episode, House of M kind of did a soft reboot and everything. It had something to do with that. I believe that somehow when the House of M reverted back, he came back to life. Like, he was dead. Something had happened in early storylines. Vulcan had been around. He was part of the X-Men for a little bit. But after House of M, he was dead, but then he came back to life. When he came back to life, he made a beeline to the Shi'ar for some reason and just took over. Or I guess because he was part of the Emperor before or something like that.
Yeah, the storyline, as I know it from doing wiki research, is that he is the previously unknown third Summers brother.
Right.
Who Catherine Summers was pregnant with at the time that she and her husband were abducted by the Shi'ar. And so he was raised to be a slave to the Empire, and eventually, through whatever circumstances took place, he became the Emperor.
Okay. So, yeah, so it gets a little hazy putting all these complications together.
Yeah.
But now he's the Emperor.
Elandra, we're talking about 50 years of history, very convoluted.
Yeah. Elandra is the former Shi'ar Empress and has been deposed by Vulcan and some of his cronies, you know, working in the, what would be, for best example, would be the Congress, or, you know, the whatever, they're the houses that help rule the planet. The Starjammers, led by Havoc, are trying to get her put back into place politically to overthrow Vulcan. And now, did that play out in the Backbone?
Yes.
Okay, why don't you talk about it?
It was the whole palace intrigue of trying to get the exiled Empress back into Shi'ar space and put her into a position where she can declare herself Empress again to reclaim the throne. So there's a bit of intrigue in getting her there and keeping her away from the Imperial Guard. which is led by a gladiator.
Of course, and, because he serves the throne.
That's right. He serves. And so there's a point where she's captured, a point where she's rescued, and then other events ensue from there.
And he breaks at one point, and one point only, does Gladiator actually break. And he has Alandra, like, in the room. He knew she was there. He busted into the room as she just appealed to him directly, to his sense of what was right and wrong and the what's best for the Empire. And for that brief moment, he actually turned and let her go.
Yes.
And carry on. But beyond that, I mean, he was like, he didn't say this, but you get that feeling like that famous movie life. I see you again. I'm going to kill you. So she,
well, he me, does, as I read it at that point, he turns his back on Vulcan.
He does.
He knows that Lilandra is the true heir to the throne. And for all this madness of war to end, she must be reestablished as the leader.
That's right. That's right. He actually joins up with her, doesn't he?
Yes.
He forsakes everything that was trained into him and everything, yes, that made him who he was, and chooses to follow her, even though she's not the actual empress.
Yes.
So sorry, I got that one a little backwards, because that does play in at the very end.
It does.
While all this is going on, let's stay on Shi'ar. So she's protected by the Gladiator. She's protected by Havoc and the Starjammers. They're walking through the middle of town to go and do the ceremony that will replace her as the Empress. Mm-hmm. And as they say, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. And at this point, I admire the job that I think, I hope I'm getting this right, Andy Lanning, the writer, does in really painting a wide spectrum of views of the population. Because there are those who support Vulcan. There are those who may not support Vulcan, but they don't want Lilandra reestablished. There are those who support Lilandra. There are those who don't want anything to do with the politics. And it's interesting that in a small space, he makes that very clear to the reader that there are all these views. And so at this point, she is walking through a gauntlet of just a mob of all these opposing viewpoints. Yeah. And the tension builds, you know, something is going to happen. And here comes a spoiler alert if you want to skip ahead a few minutes.
Yeah, okay. At this point, you might just turn it off because we're getting to the end game. So we'll be spoilers around. So if you want to experience it for yourself, now's the time to stop the podcast and finish reading it and then finish the rest of the podcast to see how your thoughts played out with ours. Because it wasn't some uprising. It wasn't necessarily some rebel in the crowd. It was a raptor that changed the game.
The self-proclaimed agents of the Shi'ar throne.
It's hard to read because they talk about listening to the Data Song and how they've been around forever. And it's this weird power. It's not like a suit. It's not a trained soldier. It's this almost this weird version of symbiote that only protects the Shi'ar Empire, and it plays into Vulcan in a little bit too. But here, they knew that they did not want her in power.
Yeah.
So,
and you're right. They don't serve the throne beyond the point that they need it for the Shi'ar Empire to fulfill its destiny.
Yeah.
As they see it.
Yeah. These are very, again, going to Star Trek references. These are very Romulan-esque characters here, just hardcore. This is our people, this is the destiny, and we exist throughout time to make sure that it happens. And they're pretty powerful, and they don't give a crap about what anybody else thinks.
Right. And so this raptor creates an illusion during the riot and assassinates Lilandra.
Yeah.
Which actually did come to me as a surprise because, is this a permanent death or is this a temporary death?
Is this Marvel death or is this real? Yeah, so, and we don't know. I mean, other than following the storylines from all the Kree and the Shi'ar don't have their own comics, so I guess it may be playing to the Inhuman storyline. I'm not sure. I don't know where they'll follow up with that, so we don't know if this is permanent, but yeah, she gets taken out, and I thought, well, surely not. Surely they're still going to twist this to where she's like, no, it's an illusion. She's okay. Nope. for the sake of this story, at least, she dead. And that I did not see coming, man. I was like, this is like what HBO Game of Thrones on me. I was like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, it was very much a surprising moment for the purpose of the storyline.
Yeah. So they're trying to find this, what they soon discovered to be a raptor, but they didn't know that at the time. They're trying to find the assassin. This other house that's political and in power has its own super soldiers, as it were, and they get involved. I think some of the dark guard, as I call them, the baddies that were released from prison that are loyal to Vulcan, get involved. And man, Gladiator gets to show his stuff off. I thought he was actually going to get beat for a second. He goes toe to toe with a few of the main bad guys in the story, a few of the main henchmen.
Yes,
and it's epic. It is definitely an epic battle. So ultimately, we'll give the spoiler here again. Ultimately, everybody loses. I mean, the Starjammers have to get the hell out. The planet's in uproar. Gladiator, without realizing what he's done, you know, he defeated the people who were attacking him. He protected the Empire. He did what he was supposed to do. He picks up this, whatever it is, a staff of some sort that apparently signifies rule.
The Imperial Scepter.
There you go. And he just walks out to people, you know, trying to make sense of everything. And the people see him and go, that's Gladiator. He survived. And so I'm like, no, look what he's holding. Hail Emperor Gladius or something like that. And then that's like, you just have to put your tablet or your book down at that point and go, I'm going to need a few days to think about this and figure out. Wow, the implications and what just happened there.
That is a big moment in the series.
How did that take you?
I can see that making sense. That can open up some of those story possibilities.
Yeah, because at no point is Vulcan directly involved in any of these battles, because he's leading the charge on his ship. So unless you come across that.
He's spouting his orders.
Yeah, he's spouting orders, and he's just going and taking over planets. So he's never on planet or in any of these skirmishes as they go. One of the most fun scenes to me was when the raptor was talking to him. And it spanned about two, maybe three episodes. Or no, I guess about two episodes. Because, you know, I consumed it all at once, and I consumed all the story. So I read about, I don't know, 30 or 40 comics. So I forget exactly how each one plays out. But the raptor shows up and says, hey, we're with the Data Song, and we're here to make sure that the Shi'ar take over, and you're doing a great job. And then he's like, screw you guys, I don't need you. And they're like, well, you know what? You're not going to be the right guy for the job. We're just going to go find somebody else. And he's like, how dare you? And then he goes to blast him. And it's the one creature in this universe so far that he found that he can't just kill. They're like, no, we're good, thanks. And they just flew off. And he's left. And his lackeys around him going, what do we say? And, you know, wisely enough, they didn't say anything. And he just kind of went, nothing happened. Let's move on. Let's keep conquering the universe. And then it builds to the T-bomb, which is just this god-awful, horrible idea of a solution.
Yes. That's one complaint I had about the storyline, is I would think that the Inhumans would be a bit smarter than to release this device which would mutate every being in the galaxy that is capable of being mutated, and thinking it would bring peace to the galaxy. Whereas I think everybody's got a superpower. Well, you know, there's going to be a lot of individuals that think, oh, I can rob this planet, or I can go take over that solar system. And it'd just be a much more widespread mass of chaos than this war is.
Yeah. Especially since it seems like Black Bolt he's probably one of the few characters in this entire universe that had the power to take Vulcan down.
Right.
We don't know if he could have, because it played out differently. Mm-hmm. But the Jump comic series, it was Superman versus Doomsday. You know, it was just two epic powerhouses fighting over, in this case, the fate of the universe. And where the Guardians come into that is they had this foreknowledge that whatever happened with this war, they had to get the war to stop. They had to make it stop, because this is what ripped space and time. This is what changed everything going forward. And they tried to warn Black Bolt and muck that up, as they tend to do. You know, that's why we love the Guardians. They kind of step in it quite easily. and end up kidnapping Crystal for a few minutes, which led to another side epic battle in nowhere because they didn't quite realize he kidnapped Crystal. You have to read it to understand. But at the same time, Adam Warlock comes back from fighting with some of Vulcan's people on the other side, and they had tagged him. So here comes Vulcan's people in one transport. Here comes Black Bolt and Inhumans on the other transport. And the Guardians are stuck in the middle to fight both of these guys. And it was just this bar brawl to end all bar brawls. It was very, very interesting. What I loved about this whole storyline was that most of these battles that were epic ended up and just give them what they want. Let's run away. Because it didn't make sense to have some superior power that would put everybody down, because if you could do that, you could stop the war.
Right, right.
You know, so it's very much, honestly, I mean, this is one of the first times I've read a comic series that was so close to real life. It's not even funny, with politics playing in and histories playing in, and the realities of war are battles are fought. Winning is just a matter of semantics sometimes.
At least real life concept as it applies to a cosmic war between the super combatants.
Wait, you're saying I can't get on the Star Jammer and go jump into all this? I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. Yeah, I know. So ultimately, all this other stuff's going on. Black Bolt decides to launch this missile to a lot of different arguments saying otherwise. And then it turns out he's going to die. You know, he's got to be on the missile to make it explode, which was a piss poor plan by Maximus the Mad, if you ask me.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, there's one little flaw in this plan. He has to be on it. So as he starts...
Oh, by the way, Medusa, your husband, he's not coming back.
That's almost exactly how he said it, too. It's like, oh, yeah. Didn't he tell you? It's like, of course he didn't tell her. Then she wouldn't have gone through with it. Yeah, it's a mess. So just as we come down to the last issue of the Batbone, and then everything else beyond that is really tying up loose ends and getting everybody else's storylines back into their comics, and off you go. Vulcan decides to take matters into his own hands. He's like, screw this noise. And he bursts in to the bomb, to the missile, and him and Black Bolt go at it. And why don't you relay that part?
So basically, they just go toe to toe, and each one gives as good as he gets. Black Bolt shouts at Vulcan at one point, and
yeah, shouts
that it didn't destroy the bomb that he was in. But
yeah, that's kind of a little weak point to it, but okay.
Eventually, they just beat the holy living hell out of each other until Crystal shows up to try to rescue Black Bolt and Lockjaw, who can teleport.
Right.
That's important.
That's, yeah.
And it looks like with that shout, Black Bolt has destroyed Vulcan.
Okay, so the coolest part about that, though, is he, like, melted the skin off of this dude.
Yes.
Just turned him to bones.
Yeah, but he got better.
He did. He did indeed.
He's reconstructing himself while Crystal convinces Black Bolt to join her back on the flying city. And that's when Vulcan rises and tackles Black Bolt and gets him out of the teleport range of Lockjaw. The bomb explodes, and neither Vulcan nor Black Bolt are anywhere to be seen.
Yep, and but credits roll, basically.
There's a cosmic rift where the bomb was.
A massive cosmic rift. And everyone's like, oh, snap. You know,
so maybe we do know where Black Bolt is, just not, not just, for sure.
Yeah. So I think the way they got past him destroying the missile when he yelled at Vulcan, because it melted Vulcan. I mean, that was really a great, greatly drawn, greatly illustrated scene. Is this whole thing is powered by his voice. So he whispers goodbye to start this whole thing off, and it's building the power to explode because it's a cosmic bomb. It's going to spread Terrigen Mist across the entire universe, which is a mighty damn big bang. So you got to be wondering, you know, how you're not going to screw something up with that. So I think the whole thing of him yelling, because you do kind of have that playing in the background. You see these little boxes come across the top corners of the screen or of the panels saying instability and this 80% charge and that. I mean, you could tell, I think it absorbed his energy, but that's what screwed it up. Was he wasn't supposed to yell at the bomb.
Yeah, I buy that.
And so basically that's where it's left, is this massive rift. Where's it going to play? I don't know. But this is exactly what Starhawk was trying to tell the Guardians to prevent. The Guardians actually told them that this would happen. You know, they relayed the message and they screwed it up, but they relayed the message. And now the Atillans are sitting there looking at this huge rift. And they described how big it was. It's really big. And they're like, oh, crap, what do we do now? And then, like you said, that's the end of War of Kings. And
yeah, so now we're left with Gladiator possibly taking over the Shi'ar throne.
Yep.
The Inhumans returning to the Kree to try to rebuild and to guide them as best they can.
Yep, and everybody just pretending there's not a hole in space. Like, we pushed a hole in that window. Let's just put duct tape over it. It was fine. So you're on the side notes, you're left with the Guardians coming together, because right before that they had had incident that almost tore the team apart. So this brought them back together. There's still some stuff going on. And actually Nowhere came to life in the midst of all that as part of the side story. It got taken over by something. It got enough power to the head actually came to life for a little bit.
You're making the Guardians of the Galaxy peripheral series story arc make it seem very interesting. So that might be one that I'll tackle soon.
It is. You know, I went back and started with the 2000. They had a short, relatively short run from 2010 to 2012, I think. Or maybe 2008 to 2010. It's easy. If you just go on the app and you look up Guardians of the Galaxy, there's three listings. There's the first run, which plays right into War of Kings, which is what I'm reading in order now. Then there's like a one-year run, and then there's like they relaunched it for the movie. And so there's a 2014 or 13 version, something like that. So, yeah, so they're more solidified. So then Nova, who is really a peripheral to all this, but as war spills out, the Nova Corps dealt with a lot of their protected planets and some of the Dark Corps, I like to call them, these baddies from prison, and how they ran rampant in the universe. Because Vulcan's like, I just need the biggest, baddest mofos to go kill people. And he got them, and that's what they did. So they didn't always just follow orders. They just kind of went and raped and pillaged. And so the Nova Corps dealt with that, and it brought their story forward to reestablish Nova Prime, to bring back some old dead characters, and to reboot the sentient Prime, you know, whatever it is. Of course, the Inhumans are going back to Kree. And then, of course, we're left with what will happen with the Shi'ar Empire. And man, are you tired? Because I'm tired. That's a lot of stuff to keep track of.
That was a very intense series. I wanted to make sure that I give credit to the writers, who are Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. And then Paul Pelletier did some very nice artwork for it, very clean and sharp, the kind that really attracts my eye.
Yeah, it was really well illustrated and drawn. I just kudos to everybody involved to keep that much story and that much complexity in line across all these different story runs. I mean, there's at least four books involved there that you kept them in line, and it played into their oncoming stories as well.
Right.
So, and to me, it put Civil War to shame as far as the complexity and how everything played. It put Infinity War to shame, you know, with the complexity of it, I thought. But, you know, people who are screaming at me about that, I'll just go ahead and say I haven't read Infinity War since the 90s. So I will go back and read that before you send me angry hate mail. But send it anyway. It's cool.
Yeah, I find it on about the level of Infinity War as far as quality. So I give this series a B plus.
Yeah, I think I would personally give it like an A myself, but again, I don't have the library to pull from of experience that you have had. So in the newer experience of stuff, you comparing Secret Wars to this and Civil War and those kind of things, this definitely is the top of my list of wars in the galaxy. It's very cool. All right, big thanks to Mike Woodard, who is a voiceover professional and comic book connoisseur who does the show for us. He is the producer and editor of this show. We thank him a whole lot. You can find me over at House of the Bear on Facebook, facebook.com/House of the Bear. I am the honored co-host of Agent Golden Exhibit, Brian Emmett on From the Helicarrier, which George makes appearances whenever he can climb aboard. And you can find this show at thehelicarrier.com, along with many other great Helicarrier Network shows. George, check us out, man.
Thank you for having me. Face front, Marvelites.
I took a line out of Pac's book, out of the M's book. Put on my dress shit and found out who I was. Tearing the roof off and I'm the bull god. Mashing a nookie and growing a mohawk. I wrote raps at first but still had banged a mud vein. Hollow point on weekdays, weekends I rock stain. Crowd served at Teptones, five dudes in my...